Today, we are going to be learning Perek Shisha Asar Mehilchos Ishus, the 16th chapter of the laws concerning marriage. Halacha Aleph, paragraph 1. Hanechasim shemachneses ha'isha labayla, bein karka, bein metaltalin, bein avadim, afal pi shehim nechtavim bishtar haksuba, ein nekroin ksuba, el nedun yishman. All the properties that a woman brings into her husband's estate, whether they are real estate, whether they are movable items, whether they are servants, even though they are written into the ksuba, they are not called ksuba, but rather they are called nidunya, dowry. Now the Rambam explains there are two types of properties that a woman brings into the marriage. V'im kibal habal achrayis hanidunya olav, v'nasis brishuso, im pachasa pachasa lo, v'im hosira hosira lo, harezu nikreis nichse tzom barzel. If the husband takes responsibility and guarantees the dowry so that it comes under his authority, the rule is that if it depreciates, the husband must bear the loss, and if it appreciates, the increment belongs to him. He gets the profit. Because he has taken full responsibility for it, it becomes like his. Now, this type of dowry is referred to as iron sheep property. That is, that the principle remains as solid as iron. It cannot hurt the woman under these circumstances. Now there's a second type of dowry, which the Rambam explains. V'im lo kibal achrayis hanadunya olav, ela harehi bershus ha'isha, im pachsa pachsa lo, v'im hosira hosira lo, harezo nikreis nichsim olog. Now if the husband does not take responsibility for the dowry, but it is in the jurisdiction of the wife, if it depreciates, she has to suffer the loss, and if it appreciates, the profit is his. And we refer to this type of dowry as nichse milug, property of milug. Milug they translate as that which is plucked from something else. In other words, the husband can only pluck or benefit from the profit of the estate, but the estate, the principal, belongs to his wife. And from now on in this chapter, we'll refer to one as nichse milug and the other as nichse tzom barzel. Halacha Beis, paragraph 2. V'chein kol nechasim sheyesh le'isha shelo hechnisa osam labayla v'lo kasva osam baksuba ela nisharu la'atzma o nafla la b'yerusha achash nesarsa o nasna la b'matana hakol nikroi nichse milug shekulam b'shusahein. Similarly, all property that the woman has that she did not introduce to her husband, they were not registered in the ksuba, but they remained as her own, or she inherited them after she was betrothed, or she was given these properties as a gift, all of these are referred to as nichse milug, because they are all under her authority. Ve'ein nekroim ksuba, ala'ika ksuba, shehumeya o masayim, imatosefes bovad. We only refer to the term ksuba in relation to the basic amount of the ksuba, that is the 100 or 200 zuz that the husband must give his wife in the event that he dies or he divorces her, with the supplementary amount. All that would be referred to as ksuba. Everything else, whether they're mentioned in the ksuba or not, are not referred to as ksuba. They're either referred to as nidunya, or nichse milug, nichse tzom barzel, and so on. Halacha Gimel, paragraph 3. Kvar hodanuch shechachamim tiknu ksuba le'isha, v'din hatosefes k'din ha'ikar. We have already made mention that the sages enacted the ksuba for a woman, and the supplementary amount has the same law as concerning the basic amount. V'lo tiknu l'gbosa kol zman shetirtza, ela harihi kechov sheyesh lo zman, v'ein haksuba nigbeis ela la'achar misas habal o im gersha. The rabbis did not enact the rule that she has a right to collect the ksuba whenever she wants to. She is restricted in collecting her ksuba just as a debt which has a fixed time. And when does she collect her ksuba? The ksuba cannot be collected except after the death of her husband or if he divorces her. So too, our sages enacted that if the husband has fields, good fields, and he has inferior quality fields, then he has intermediate quality, and the wife comes to collect her ksuba from his estate, she can only collect it from the inferior quality property, and that is referred to as ziburis. Commentaries explain the reason for this, that sages were afraid that the wife might try to provoke her husband to divorce her so she can collect the ksuba from superior quality property. That's why she's only given inferior quality. Halacha Dalet, V'chein Hiskinu, they also enacted, Shikshatavo Ligbos Ksubasa, Acher Moso, Lotigba Ad Shetishava Benikitas Chayfetz, Shlo Heniach Etzla Klum. When the woman comes to collect the Ksuba after the death of her husband, she cannot collect the Ksuba until she gives an oath by holding a sacred object, such as a Sefer Torah. And what does she have to swear to? That she did not have in her possession anything that the husband has left for her for that very purpose. V'lo machra lo ksubasa, v'lo machra oso. She also has to swear that she did not sell her husband the rights of the ksuba, nor did she forego her rights to the ksuba. V'shamin lo kol masha oleha, uposan oso miksubasa. The court must then assess everything that is on her person, her clothing that he gave her, and subtract its value from her ksuba. However, the Rambam adds and qualifies that, Avleim gershel ritzono, gova below shvua. If the husband voluntarily divorces his wife, she can collect without an oath. Ve'ein sham ksusha aleha, and one does not have to assess the value of her garments that she's wearing, shahare lekachem la, v'zachsa behen, v'hu rotza lehotzia lohi. Because the husband had bought these garments for his wife's use, and she acquired them, and now he wants to get rid of her, not she. He wants to break the marriage, not she. Therefore, she's entitled to those garments besides her ksuba. Halacha hei, paragraph 5. V'chein hiskinu shlo tigba ha'almana ksubasa elemen hakarka. Our sages also enacted that a widow cannot collect her ksuba except from land, from real estate, and not from movable objects. We will soon see later on that a subsequent enactment of the Gaonim changed that. However, until that period, and in certain cases even now, the almana, the widow, is only entitled to real estate, not for movable objects. Another thing that they enacted, Ve'ena gova mishevach sheshavchu nechasim la'achar misas habal. She cannot collect from the appreciation of her husband's estate after he died. In other words, if there wasn't sufficient funds in his estate, or sufficient property, to pay for the entire amount of the ksuba after he died, but then a while later it appreciated, and now there is enough, she can only take as much as there was at the time of his death. A third thing they enacted, Ve'ein habanos nizonos la'acha misas avien, mishevach sheshavchu nechasim la'acha misaso. The daughters of this woman are not to be sustained, supported, fed, after their father dies from the appreciation of his estate, that which appreciated after he died. A fourth thing they enacted, Ve'ena terefes b'ksubasa b'shevach shehishbiach halokeach, afopi shabalchov goves ha'shevach. Furthermore, if the husband had sold the property when he was alive, in which case there is still a lien on the property for her ksuba, she could nevertheless not collect her ksuba from any of the appreciation of the property after it was purchased. Even though a creditor does have the right to collect the appreciation. Udvarim elu mikulei ksubahem. All these matters are part of the leniencies that are associated with ksuba. And the reason given in the Talmud is that the sages were lenient when it comes to collecting ksuba in terms of the husband, since the woman would rather get married more than the man, and therefore she didn't do such a great favor to him, whereas in the case of the creditor and the debtor, the creditor definitely did a great favor to the debtor, and therefore he should not lose any of his privileges, so he is entitled to collect from the appreciation. Halacha vav, v'chein mekulei ksuba, there are additional leniencies attached to the ksuba, and they are, shetitel ha'isha b'ksubasa min ha'pachos shebematbeos, that a woman collects her ksuba from the coins which are of lesser value. What does the Rambam mean by that? Ketzad, how so? Nasi isha b'makom echad, v'gersha b'makom acher. If the man married this woman in one place, and he divorces her elsewhere, im ha'yemos mikom ha'nesuyin tovim mim'os makom ha'gerushin, nosin lo mim'os makom ha'gerushin. If the money, the coins, in the place where he married her are better than the coins in the place where he's divorcing her, he gives her the money of the place of divorce, those that are worth less. They don't weigh as much. They don't have the same quality. V'im ha'yu m'os makam ha'gerushin tovim m'os makam ha'nesuyin, nosan lo m'os makam ha'nesuyin. On the other hand, if the money in the place of divorce are better are superior to the money of the place in which the marriage took place, then he can give her the money of the place where the marriage took place, the inferior quality. All of this is to make it easier for the husband to give her the ksuba. Now, obviously, in each case, he must give her the required amount, the 200 zuz, or the 100, depending whether she's a virgin or not. Less than that, he's not allowed to give her. The only difference is whether he can give her inferior quality coins up to that amount or not. When does the foregoing apply? When the money is mentioned in the ksuba without any specification as to what kind of money. If, however, the husband specified in the ksuba a certain type of coin, well known, whether for the basic amount of the ksuba or for the supplementary amount, the same rule applies as that which applies to a loan made by the creditor to the debtor in a certain known coin, where the debtor must repay the loan in the same coin, as shall be explained in the laws concerning loans, later on in the Mishneh Torah. Halacha Zayin, paragraph 7, Tiknu ha-ga'onim b'chol ha-yeshivos, she'tiyo ha-isha gova ksubasa, Achri mos baila af min hametaltalin, kederach shehiskinu lebal chov ligvos min hametaltalin. The Gaonim, those are the post-Talmudic rabbis, in all of the academies have ordained that the wife may collect her ksuba after her husband's death, even out of movable property, just as they have ordained that the creditor may collect out of movables. Pashta takana zu barov Yisrael. This enactment has been accepted, has become popular throughout the majority of Jewish communities. Normally, that is, according to the law of the Torah, a creditor cannot collect from the estate of the debtor, if the debtor had died, and now the orphans have inherited the estate, except from real estate. He cannot collect from movables. That is the biblical law. And the reason for that is that the Torah only allows you to collect from the debtor if he is the one who borrowed the money. But the orphans didn't borrow the money. Why should they have to pay from their movable objects? With regard to real estate, however, the law is different, because real estate is like a guarantor. It's like someone who accepts responsibility, and there's a lien on the property, and the lien remains there even after the man dies. However, the rabbis, the Gaonim, enacted that a creditor could collect the debt from movable objects as well. And the same enactment applies to the ksuba, that she could collect the ksuba from movables. And this custom, as the Rambam said, had been accepted in the majority of communities. V'chein shar tinoi ksuba, kulam k'ksubahein, v'yeshnam b'metaltalin k'bibakarka. Likewise, all the other conditions stipulated in the ksuba are in this respect subject to the same rule as the ksuba itself, such as the requirement of feeding the daughters, the requirement of paying for doctor bills and the like. They are subject to the same law, and they can be collected from movable objects. There's one exception. Chutz miksubas benin dichrin, shlo matzanu minug yirushasim pashut b'chol ha-yeshivos. The only exception is the ksuba of male children, where we did not find the manner of their inheritance rights uniform in all the academies. The particular type of condition this is, the inheritance of the male children, will be discussed later. L'fichach ani omer, therefore the Rambam says, I say, mamidin osa al din ha-gemara, we revert to the law of the Talmud, she'en yarsh n'ksubas imam elamin ha-karka, that the male heirs, the male sons of this woman, cannot inherit the ksuba of their mother except from real estate, from immovable property, not from movables. Because this enactment did not spread throughout the communities in regard to the inheritance of the male children. Halacha Ches, paragraph 8. Kvar nohagu b'chol ha-makomos she'yadaynu b'she'shamaynu shimam she'yichtavu b'ksuba bein me'mekarkoi bein me'metaltalei. It has long since become the practice in all the places that we know of and have heard from to write in the ksuba out of either land or movables. In other words, even though the Gaonim enacted that she could collect from both real estate and movable objects, nevertheless, the custom is to put that specifically and explicitly in the ksuba. And the Rambam proves very highly of this enactment by saying, this is an important enactment, and they were great and wise men who have introduced it. And the reason for this is, because this is a stipulation involving money, and the result is that the widow is now enabled to collect out of movables by virtue of this stipulation, and not simply by virtue of an enactment by later day sages. It's a much stronger obligation, because this was stipulated in the ksuba itself, rather than something that has been enacted by sages of a later generation who don't have the full force and power of a stipulation that two people make among themselves. The actual difference, whether it was in the ksuba or we rely on the enactment, will be seen in the next halacha, halacha tes. 9. Hareshalo kasov kach bishtara ksuba, elinasa stam. If it was not so written in the document of the ksuba, but he married her without specifying in the ksuba as to what she will be able to collect from, if he knew, the husband knew about this enactment of the Gaonim, that she should be allowed to collect from movables she could collect, because under those conditions he committed himself. If, however, he did not know about this enactment, or we don't really know if he knew or not, this matter requires a lot of deliberation. Because she'ain koach b'takanas ha'gaonim ladin ba, afal pish lo nisparsha, kedin tnai ksuba she'ain takanas ha'sanhedrin ha'gdola, at she'notzi ba'mamon min ha'yarshim. Because the enactment of the Gaonim does not have sufficient authority to be applicable even when it has not been specifically stipulated. It is not the same as those stipulations of the ksuba themselves, which were instituted by the great Sanhedrin, to the degree that would empower us to collect money from the heirs. When we have to take money from someone, we have to have full authority, and it's questionable whether this enactment by itself has the full authority. And this, of course, is the reason why the Rambam said earlier that it's a very good thing that the sages enacted to put this requirement or this stipulation in the ksuba itself, thereby obviating the whole question as to whether the Gaonim have the power to enact something, to take money away from someone, based on their own enactment. Halacha Yud, paragraph 10. V'otiknu chachamim, sheyiyu kol nichse habal achroin v'arboin l'ksuba. Afilu ksubasem mone, v'yesh lo karka ba'lofim, zehuvim hakol tacha shibur haksuba. Another thing the sages have enacted, that all of the husband's possessions should serve as guarantee for the ksuba. Even if the ksuba amounts to only a mana, 100 zuz, and the property that he has is worth thousands of gold pieces, all of it serves as a guarantee for the ksuba. What does this mean in practical terms? V'chol shiyimkar achar hanesuyim nechasav, afal pishim imkara kaya, v'yesh lo limkar kol nechasav imyirtza, yesh lo litrof osam b'ksubasa, kishi yigarshena o kishi yamus, im lo timtza nechasim b'nei chorin. Anything, any part of his possessions that the husband will sell after the marriage, even though the sale is valid, and he has the right to sell all of his property if he so wishes, but nevertheless, the wife may seize the property in payment of her ksuba if he divorces her, or if he dies, in case she finds no other free property, that is, property that has not been sold, she is allowed to take this property that he did sell. Ukisha titrof, or titrof elo b'shvua b'nikitas chayfetz, kedin kol balichovos. When she collects money from the sole property, she collects her ksuba, rather, from the sold property, she can only collect by giving an oath, by holding a sacred object. This is in accord with the law that applies to all debtors and creditors, v'takanazu k'dei shalotia ksuba kala be'enov. And the reason for this enactment is that the ksuba should not seem light in the husband's eyes. That's why all of his property, even that which he sells, is mortgaged for the ksuba. Halacha Yud Aleph, 11. Kishemashbiyin bezdin, oha yarsh neshol mana, kishetavu ligbos ksubasa. When the court or the heirs administer the oath to the widow when she comes to collect her ksuba, ein mashbiyin osa elachutz the bezdin. They only give her their oath outside of the court. B'pnei shebatei dinim hayunim naim ul hashbiya, shechoshishin la shemalot sidagdei kal atzma b'shvua. Because the courts used to avoid subjecting her to such an oath on the ground that she might not be duly scrupulous about it. She might think that an oath to the effect that she has nothing would be acceptable even if she does have a little bit, thinking that it's not such a terrible thing, and therefore there's a great fear that her oath may not be 100% honest. However, when she makes the oath outside of the court, it's not such a serious matter because it does not involve God's name, and it is not as dangerous or serious in terms of the punishment as an oath that might be given, a false oath, in the court itself. V'im ratzo ha'yisomim l'hadira, noderes lahem kol ma sheyirtzu. U'madir osa bebezdin, ve'achakach noteles ksubasa. If, however, the orphans wish to subject her to a vow, she may vow for them anything they desire, and they may administer the vow to her in court, after which she may receive payment of her ksuba. What he means by this is, there's two things. There's an oath and a vow. The oath is when you swear that such and such is true. The vow, in Hebrew, which is referred to as a neder, is where you say, for example, may these types of food be forbidden to me if I have taken and collected any part of my ksuba. This type of a vow, even if it's violated, is not as serious a crime as the other type of oath which one gives that is false. Halacha Yud Beis, 12. Meisahal mana kodim shetishava, ein yarsheha yarshim iksubasa klum, she'ein la ksuba ashetishava. If the widow dies before she had a chance to give this oath in court, her heirs, in other words, the children that she had from another husband, do not inherit any part of her ksuba, because she was not yet entitled to her ksuba until she would have given this oath. Since she died beforehand, there's nothing that they could inherit. V'im niseis kodem shetishava, harizu nishbas acha nisuin, v'noteles kol zman shetirtza. If she got married to another husband before she gives the oath, she then gives the oath after she gets married, and she can take whenever she wants to. Aval einu noderes v'noteles, shema yafalo habal. However, she could not make the neder. She could not say that this food shall be forbidden to me if I took anything of the ksuba and then collect her ksuba, because there's a danger that the husband might annul her ksuba. And therefore, when she's making the neder, this vow, she's relying on the fact that her husband will annul it for her, and therefore her vow might very well be false. However, if she makes the vow before she gets married, her second husband has no authority to annul that vow. Halacha Yud Gimel, 13. Yichud la karka b'ksubasa. Bein she yichud la b'arabas ha-metzarim, bein b'metzer echad, govas ksubasa mimena below shvua. If the husband designated a certain piece of land as a guarantee for her ksuba, whether he had defined it by all four boundaries, or if he defines it by saying where one of the boundaries happens to be, she could collect her ksuba from this property without having to give an oath. So too, if the husband had written in her ksuba that he is giving her this object of movable objects, and they are still intact, they're still around, she can just take them without having to give an oath. Likewise, if these movables had been sold and other movables were bought with the money that had been realized from the sale of the first movables, and it is also known that the latter movables were bought with the proceeds of the former, then she may take the latter, these movables, without an oath, because they are as if they had been specified in the ksuba, and there's no need for the oath in this case. Halacha Yudalid, paragraph 14. Hapogemis ksubasa lo tipara ela b'shvua. A wife who impairs her ksuba may not be paid except after she swears an oath. What does impairment of a ksuba refer to? So the Rambam himself explains. Keitzar, how so? Hotziya shtar ksuba sheyesh bo ela b'zuz. She produces a document of a ksuba which contains the amount of 1,000 zuz. In other words, she's claiming 1,000 from her husband. Habal omer niskabal takol. The husband says, you got everything already. I already paid you. V'hi omeris lo niskabalti elekach v'kach. And she says, I only receive so much and so much. V'afilu yeshala edim b'miktza shenotla. Even if there are witnesses to this partial payment. V'afilu digduka atzma b'chesh b'ma shenotla b'chatzi pruta. And even if she herself has been scrupulous in her accounting of what was paid down to half a pruta, nevertheless, lo sitol hashar ela b'shvuah, she cannot take the balance of the payment of the ksuba unless she gives an oath. And the reason for this is, normally, the person who receives the money is not as scrupulous as the one who gives it. Therefore, to make her more careful, they required her to give an oath in court. Halacha Tezvav, paragraph 15. Amar habal niskabalt hakol. V'hi omeres lo niskabalti klum. The husband says, you received everything. She says, I got nothing. V'eid echad meir oleha shiniskabla hakol amiktsas. One witness testifies to the effect that she received everything or some of it. Lo tipara kol haksuba elo b'shvua. He does not have to pay the whole ksuba, the balance, unless she gives an oath. Halacha Tezayin, 16. Hanifrash lo b'fanav, lo sipara elo b'shvua. If a woman comes to collect a ksuba, not in the presence of her husband, she can only collect with an oath. Ketzat, what is an example of this? Hareisha gerish es ishto v'halachlo. If a man divorces his wife and then he leaves, bezdin yardim l'nechas of acha shetishava umag ben osa ksubasa. The courts will go into his property after she gives the oath, and they will collect the ksuba from his property. V'hu sheyia b'makam rachok sheyesh lahem torach l'hodio. Provided that the husband is now found in a very distant, remote place, so it is a great effort to have to notify him. Avim ha'yib b'makam karav l'hodio sholchan lo u'madiyan oso. V'im lo yavo tishava v'sito. If, however, the husband was not that far away, he was pretty close, that it was possible and not so difficult for them to notify him, they send messengers to him and notify him, and if he does not come, then she gives the oath, and then she collects her ksuba. Halacha Yudzayin, 17. Hapocheses ksubasa, nifra shalo b'shvua. A wife who reduces her ksuba may be paid without an oath. Ketzad, what is an example of this? Hotzia shtar ksuba be'elav zuz. She produces a document of a ksuba that says 1,000 zuz. Hu omer niskabalt hakol. The husband says, you got everything, I already paid you. V'hi omeris lo niskabalti klum. V'ainli ela chamesh meo zuz. And she says, I got nothing. However, I'm only coming to collect from you 500 zuz. V'zeh shakosav li elef amana haisa beini leveino hareza nefrash lo b'shvua. And the fact that it says in the ksuba that you owe me 1,000 zuz, there was a trust between us, and I actually never intended to collect the full 1,000. We just wrote 1,000, but I only intended to collect 500. She is then entitled to collect the amount of the ksuba, the 500, that she now says he owes her, without the need of an oath. Aval im omr ein bishtar ksubasi elechamesh meyoz, ein nefras bishtar zesh yesh bo elev zuz klum. If, however, she says this document of the ksuba contains only 500, she doesn't say that you only owe me 500. She says the ksuba itself does not demand more than 500. She cannot collect with this document anything at all, because this document she had made null and void by admitting that she only has 500 zuz coming to her because of this document. That is an admission, a tacit admission, that it's a fraudulent document. Lefichach nishba shuas heses v'niftar. That's why the husband now has to give an oath, but an informal type of an oath, not such a serious one, and he is now released and exempt from paying her anything. Halacha Yidches, 18. Kol makam sharmarnu lo sipara elo b'shvua omrim la bezdin hishavi utli. Wherever we said she could not receive payment unless she makes an oath, we say to her, the court says to her, give this oath and collect. In those places where we said she can collect without an oath, we say to the husband, in other words, the court says to the husband, get up and give her the amount that you owe her. And you, the husband, are not to be believed with your claim, with your argument, until you can prove and cite evidence to your word. Halacha Yutes, paragraph 19. Amar habal meyatzmo, tishavu li al tanasi. Omnim la, hishavu yutli. If the husband, on his own, says to her, it's not the court, give me an oath to contradict my claim, we then say to her, give an oath, and then you will collect. V'sishava b'nikitas chayfetz. The oath she has to give is an oath in which she has to hold a holy object. Hisneis imo shetigbuk sabasa shalo b'shvua, o shetehena menes b'chol ma shetiton, gova mimenu b'lo shvua klal. If the wife stipulated to the husband that she is to be entitled to collect her ksuba even without an oath, or that she is to be trusted in anything she may claim, even in such claims where an oath is normally required, she can collect from him without any oath whatsoever. However, if she comes to collect from his heirs, she must nevertheless give an oath, and then she can collect, because the husband only released her from the oath if she would collect the ksuba in his own lifetime, and not from his heirs. Halacha Chaf, paragraph 20. Hisnes imo shetigbu ksubasa miyarshav b'lo shvua, o shetia nemenes b'choma shetiton al yarshav, harezo notelus mehem b'lo shvua. If the woman had made a stipulation to her husband that she is to collect her ksuba from his heirs without an oath, or that she is to be believed in everything that she may claim from his heirs, she may accordingly collect from them without an oath, because the stipulation was made expressly for that purpose, even from the heirs. However, if she comes to take mortgage property, she may do so only after swearing an oath. We mean by mortgage property such property that was sold in the lifetime of the husband after the marriage. They are mortgaged to the payment of her ksuba, if there is no other property, free property. The oath she would have to make is, of course, to those people who purchased the property. Even though the husband believed her and accepted her stipulation, his stipulation, in other words, the stipulation of the husband, is only effective with respect to himself or with respect to his heirs. But to cause another person, a stranger's, money to be forfeited, his stipulation would not be effective for that purpose. However, the Ravid, the Rambam's critic, disagrees, and he says if the husband's declaration that he believes the wife and any claim that she might make later on, and if that precedes the sale of his property, she can collect without an oath, because the person who bought the property should not have purchased the property knowing that the husband had trusted her with any claim that she might make without an oath. Therefore, he has forfeited himself. It is his own fault, and therefore she doesn't have to lose on his account. Halacha Chafal 21. Almana shahaya shtar ksuba yotze metachas yada. Nishbas v'gova ksubasa la'olam afila acha mea shana. Bein shahaysa beveis baila, bein shahaysa beveis aviha. A widow who has in her possession a document of a ksuba, she can give the oath and collect her ksuba forever, even after 100 years. There's no time limit. There's no statute of limitations. Whether she is in the house of her husband, she continues to stay there, or whether she returns and is now living in the house of her father. If she would have forgone her rights to the ksuba, she would have given it to the heirs. The fact that she still has it entitles her to collect the ksuba forever. V'im ein shtar ksuba yotze mitachas yada, ein la klum. If, however, she does not have the document of the ksuba in her possession, she has nothing. She is not even entitled to the basic amount of the ksuba, and even if she made her claim on the day that her husband died, the fact that she doesn't have the ksuba makes us suspicious that perhaps she had already received it, or perhaps she had waived her rights for the ksuba and returned the document. Likewise, with regard to a divorcee, even the basic amount of the ksuba, she does not have a right to collect unless she produces the document of the ksuba. Obviously, that's if the husband contradicts her claim. If the husband admits that he owes her, he's of course obligated to pay her even without the document. Halacha Chav Beis, Mamed Varim Amurim, when does this apply? B'makom Shadarkam Lichtav Ksuba, in a place where the custom is to write a ksuba. Avu b'makom she'ein darkam lichtav ksuba, elisom chenal tanai bezdin, harezo gova ikar ksuba, afu pi she'ein b'yad d'shtar ksuba, bein is garsha, bein is almana, bein she'haysa b'beis baila, bein she'haysa b'beis aviyah. If, however, in a region where it is not the custom to write a ksuba, but people rely on the stipulation of the court, she is entitled to collect the basic amount of the ksuba, even though she does not produce, and she does not have in her possession, the very document of a ksuba. And this is true whether she was divorced, or whether she is widowed, whether she is in the house of her husband, whether she is in the house of her father. However, the Rambam says, Aval tosefes ein lo b'chol mokom el b'roya b'rura. This only applies to the basic amount, but the supplementary amount of the ksuba, she does not have a right to collect in any place, except if she has a clear, convincing proof. Since the supplementary amount is not part of the condition of the courts, but it is something that he gives of his own volition, it is something that she must have proof of the existence of such a commitment in order for her to collect. Halacha Chav Gimel 23. V'ad kama tigbah almana ha'iker b'makom she'ein kosm k'suba. How long? What is the time limit for a widow to collect the basic amount of the k'suba in those places where they don't write the k'suba? So the Rambam explains, im ha'isa be'beis ba'ila gova la'olam. If she remains in her husband's house, she can collect forever. There's no statute of limitations. V'im ha'isa be'beis aviha ad esrim v'chamish shana. If she returns, to her father's house, she has a time limit of 25 years. V'im bo litboa acher esrim v'chamish shana ein la klum. If she then makes a claim after 25 years, she gets nothing. If she would not have waived her right to the ksuba, she would not have been silent such a long time. She does not have the excuse that she might have had if she would have lived together with the heirs in her husband's house, that she's ashamed to claim them when they're together with her, when they're living together. But since she is not together with the heirs, she cannot say, I was embarrassed to make a claim when the heirs live together with me in one home. Chav Dalet, paragraph 24, Lefichach, im haya hayorish atzma molich mezonaseho lebeis avio, metapil ba, yesh lo lit boak subasa va filo achar esrim v'chamishana, mipnei shezoshe shaska v'lo tavami mipnei shehi bosha min hayorish. Therefore, the Rambam says, if the heir himself delivers her food to the house of her father and is preoccupied and takes care of her, she then has the right to claim her ksuba even after 25 years, because the reason she was silent all along and she did not make a claim is obviously because she was embarrassed to do so when she had this close relationship with the heir. The fact that they took care of her so much, she was ashamed to make a claim from them. Chafhei, paragraph 25, he omeris. Bisula nisesi v'ika ksubasi mesayim v'habal o yarsha v'omrim b'ula nises v'ein lo elameya. The woman claims that when she was married, she was a virgin, and therefore the basic amount of the ksuva that she's entitled to is 200 zuz. Whereas the husband or his heirs claim that when she was married, she was not a virgin, and therefore she's only entitled to 100. The law is as follows: im yesh edim shiro she'asa lo haminhago she'nagu anshi osa ha'ir la'sosam lipsula kagon minei simcha o ksarim o malbush yedua o shar dvarim she'ein osin kach elu lipsula harizon etelos masayim v'im ein lo edim bazeh harizon etelos mana. The Rambam explains, there are witnesses that saw that the customs that apply in those regions in the case of a virgin were practiced at her wedding. For example, there are different types of simcha, different types of rejoicing, such as certain types of dances, or a crown that was worn, or a certain type of a known garment, or anything else that is only performed and only done for a virgin, then she's entitled to 200, because she has proof that she was a virgin. If she doesn't have such witnesses, she's only entitled to collect 100 zuz. If the husband is around, in the case of divorce, then she has the right to subject him to a biblical oath, because here he has conceded to part of the claim by saying that he owes her 100, and her claim is 200. And the law is that when you are claiming someone, and the person denies everything, then biblically the person does not have to give an oath. But if he concedes some of it, he does have to give an oath, a biblical oath. V'neman ha'katan l'hoid begodlo v'lomar zachar ani k'shehayisi katan shenasa l'plonis mina kapsulos. A minor is believed to testify after he becomes an adult and to say, I remember that when I was a minor, that this and this woman, at her wedding, these customs were performed and were practiced as the custom that is done in the case of a virgin, even though he was a minor at the time. And all these things that we're discussing obviously applies to a place where a ksuba is not written, as we said before, in which case we have no way of knowing what the amount was, 200 or 100. If there was a ksuba written, we just look at the ksuba. Halacha Chavav, paragraph 26. Ha'isha sha'amru l'bayla gerashtani, nemenis. A woman who says to her husband, you have divorced me, she is to be believed. She'ena mi'iza paneh b'fnei baila, because she would not have the nerve, the audacity, to say a thing like that in the presence of her husband, if it wouldn't be true. In other words, there is such a presumption that a woman would not have that type of nerve. Lafich ha'isha shehotziya shtar ksuba, ve'ein ima geit, v'amru labayla gerashtani, v'avad giti, tenli ksubasi. Therefore, if a woman produces a ksuba, but she doesn't have a bill of divorce, and says to her husband, "You have divorced me, and I lost my bill of divorce, and give me now my ksuba." Vahu Omer, and he in turn says, "Lo gerashtich, I have not given you any divorce. Chayev litan lo ikar ksuba." He's obligated to give her the basic amount of the ksuba. Aval eina nosen lo hatosefes at shetavi raya shegersha, or sheyete get ima ksuba mitachas yada. However, he is not obligated to give her the supplementary amount of the ksuba until she can prove that she was divorced by him, or until she produces a bill of divorce together with the ksuba. Halacha Chavzayin, paragraph 27. Amal habal kachaya gerashti v'nasati la kolak ksuba ikar v'tosefes v'kosvili shover v'avid shoveri. The husband says to her, "This is the way things happened. I divorced her and I gave her all of her ksuba, the basic amount as well as the supplementary amount, and she wrote me a receipt, and I lost the receipt." Because he could have said, "I never divorced her," and he would not be obligated to give her the supplementary amount, therefore he is believed. He then gives her an oath. He subjects her to an oath by holding the sacred object. He then has to give her the basic amount, because he has no way of releasing himself, exempting himself from that. However, he then gives an informal oath for the supplementary amount, and he is released from paying it. Halacha Chavches, 28. Hotzia geit ve'en b'yada shtar ksuba. Im derech osamak mishlo yichtavu ksuba, go v'ikr ksubasa b'geit shabiyada. If she produces a get, but not a ksuba. If the custom of that place not to write a ksuba, she can collect the basic amount with her get. V'im dakim lichtav ksuba, afila ikr ein lo achetotzi shtar ksuba, k'mo shabiyaron. If, however, the custom is to write a ksuba, she's not even entitled to the basic amount until she can produce her ksuba, as we explained. V'nishba habal shvuas hes al tanasa v'nifta. The husband then gives an informal oath against her claim and is now exempt from paying. Chavtes, hotzia shnei git mishtei ksubos, go v'shtei ksubos. If she produces two bills of divorce and two ksubas, she collects both ksubas because she was married and divorced twice. Hotzia shtei ksubas v'geit echad, eina gova el ksuba achas. If she produces two ksubas in one get, she can only collect one ksuba. V'eza mehen gova, which one? In shtein shavos bitl ha'achrona es harishona v'eina tarefes el mizman ha'achrona. If they're both equal amounts, then the latter one nullifies the first one, and she can only collect from the date that the latter one was written. In other words, any property that was sold before the latter one was written, she's not entitled to collect from the people who bought the property. If, however, one of the two has more than the other one, she can collect from whichever one she chooses, and the second one, the other one, is null and void. Lamed. Hotzia shnei git nu ksuba achas, ein lo el ksuba achas. If she produces two divorces and one ksuba, she's only entitled to one. And the reason for this is, shehamegaris is ishtov hirzira stam al ksubasa harishon hirzira. Because a man who divorces his wife and then remarries her without specifying, without writing another ksuba, he's relying on the first ksuba, and therefore she's only entitled to one. Hotzia get nu ksuba achar misos habal. If she produces a get and a ksuba after the husband dies, so it depends. Im geit kodem l'ksuba, gova ha-get zeh ikar ksuba, im ein darka lichta ksuba, v'gova komashi yesh b'ksuba sazu, sherezach saba b'misaso. If the get predates the ksuba, then she can collect with this get the basic amount of the ksuba, if in that region the custom is not to write a ksuba, and she can collect everything that is written in this ksuba as well, because she is entitled to it by virtue of his death. V'im ksuba kodmas haget, however, if the ksuba predates the get, ein lo el ksuba achas, she only is entitled to one ksuba, shal ksubas harishon herzira, because when he remarried her on the terms of the first ksuba. Lamed aleph, ha'ishin amenes loma meiz b'ayla k'desh t'inasei, k'moshi yizbar b'hilchas gerishin, a woman is believed to say my husband died in order that she could remarry, as will be explained in the laws of divorce. Amitznoi ha'ksuba, jim t'inasei la'achar, achar mosa titol koma shekosav lo b'ksubasa. One of the conditions of the ksuba is that if she remarries to someone else after her husband's death, she's entitled to everything that he wrote her in her ksuba. L'fichach im bo lebezin v'yom rameiz b'ayla. Therefore, if she comes to court and she says, "My husband died, give me permission to remarry," and she mentions nothing about the ksuba, we permit her to remarry and we give her an oath and she can collect her ksuba. If, however, she comes and she says her husband died, "My husband died, give me my ksuba," we don't even allow her to remarry because she just came for the ksuba, and the presumption is that the husband did not die. Her intention is not even to remarry, but to collect the ksuba in the lifetime of her husband. If, however, maybe she comes and says, my husband died, permit me to remarry and give me my ksuba. We do permit her to remarry, and we give her the ksuba because her primary concern is to remarry. If she says to court, comes to court and says, give me my ksuba and permit me to remarry, we allow her to remarry, but we don't give her ksuba. And if she seizes it, we don't take it from her. Because here's the question, since she prefaced ksuba before marriage, perhaps she's only interested in the ksuba, and perhaps she is interested really in marriage. With this, the Rambam concludes the 16th chapter of the laws concerning marriage.